Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Hideki Matsuyama is a surprise winner this week at Riviera, a final round 62, the lowest closing score ever at this famed venue. Gets the win by three shots over Luke List and Will Zalatoris. It also capped what was a very eventful week at Riviera. My first one out, Rex, in the year 2024. You're watching at home. You look well rested. What was your biggest takeaway?
Patrick Cantlay. I expected him to come out and shoot a couple under par, win pretty easily, and shoots two over par and just looks ridiculous. Like, I didn't understand it. Like, I feel like he's a player that is poised to take that next step, to become a dominant player. He's already a star. And he goes out and does this in his hometown event at a golf course that he's played virtually his entire life. That shocked me.
Patty Ice, no more?
Not so much.
Patty Ice melting? I mean, that seems like a long time ago that he was staring down Bryson head-to-head at the BMW Championship. Everyone got real excited. He took it to the next level the following week at Eastlake. It's pretty shocking, Rex, but he's gone a year and a half, Patrick Cantlay has, without a victory on the PGA Tour. Did you sense anything that was amiss on Sunday? Like, what did you actually notice?
I don't think I sensed anything. And it's funny. I did a radio interview on Saturday morning. Someone, what do you expect on Sunday afternoon? And I go, this is ridiculous. And this is my own unrealistic expectations, but I expect some emotion from Pat Cantlay, because had he won this, which I fully expected him to do so, it would have been his hometown event. We were in the middle of talking about Tiger Woods, which we're going to get to, who withdrew after midway through the second round with illness or whatever the case may be. I mean, this is a guy that went through his own issues. You wrote a fantastic story a few years ago, if I remember it, won an award, talking about how, I mean,
probably just an honorable mention. I don't actually win awards. I just get the most honorable mentions of any golf writer in human history.
Just collecting. You're just a compiler. Is that what you are? You're a compiler when it comes to.
They don't get anything. They just get pats on the back. And no one gets more pats on the back than I do.
It's pretty good. But you look at what he has overcome. And I think it's real easy to skip by that. And I don't like to do it because he's kind of stoic. He's not a lot of fun to root for. He's not a lot of fun to listen to. I remember listening to him a few weeks ago at Pebble Beach, and I turned to a colleague of ours, Doug Ferguson, the AP golf writer, and I'm like, Pat smiles at the wrong time. And when you're in the middle of an interview, you realize that when he's saying something, the words that are coming out of his mouth do not match the expression on his face. And you're like, okay, like, he's a little off. Like, he's not clicked in. He's not locked in all the right places. However, this felt like the perfect time. I mean, he's a LA kid. He still works with Jamie Mulligan, who, you know, the head pro at Valencia Country Club, just a few miles north of there or south of there. And I was shocked. I did not see this coming at all, simply because he doesn't do that. He may not blow your doors off. He may not be the guy that goes out and birdies three of the last four holes to win a tournament, but he's not going to shoot two over in the final round to lose it. And that's exactly what he did.
I'll go in a different direction with my biggest takeaway. And look, I feel like we have to pay off Hideki.
Tiger.
It'd been more than 2 years since Hideki Matsuyama won. At 62 on this golf course with the firm conditions that we had was absolutely insane, as were the shots that he hit into 15 and 16. Obviously added a birdie on 17 as well, but hitting those two shots on those two holes to within a foot of the cup to seal the victory was certainly impressive. He has had, like Tiger, like Will Zalatoris, some issues over the past couple of years with either his back or his neck, and dropped outside the top 50 in the world ranking. I don't think it was out of the realm of possibility to suggest that Hideki may have been washed, that kind of his window had expired. He got the big Masters victory in 2021, and he had gotten to a point now where he wasn't all that competitive. And so now to get a victory at the signature event, he's back up to 20th in the world. He now becomes the winningest Asian-born player in PGA Tour history, I thought was hugely impressive. On Sunday, though, in the story that I'm writing for NBCSports.com/golf, was the return of Will Zalatoris, who obviously had his own injury issues.
I knew that's where you were going. Like, you didn't have to tell me. I knew exactly as soon as I saw the leaderboard where you were going to go. You were going to go to your boy.
It's ridiculous though, Rex. So you were at Memphis in 2022. And he'd come so close so many times, three top five finishes in major championships.
Sitting in a playoff with clutch putts, the things that we didn't expect him to do. Amazing.
Yes. So he wins that week in Memphis, the first event of the FedEx Cup playoffs. The very next week, he injures himself and is out for the rest of 2022. I don't think he necessarily rushed back too quickly in 2023, but he played a full slate trying to get ready for the Masters. It was pretty clear that he just wasn't right, ended up injuring himself in the tournament practice area and underwent a micro discectomy, the same procedure that Tiger Woods had 5 or 6 years ago. I mean, that is a scary proposition for a 25-year-old to undergo that serious of a procedure and miss the entirety of the 2023 season. There were doubts, most certainly, about whether he would ever be able to come back fully healthy, whether he would ever be able to return to the player that he was on the PGA Tour. You were in the Bahamas, would he shoot 81 or 82 in the opening round, and to now be where he is at this point, tying for second at Riviera, kind of opening up his schedule for the rest of the year, just 2 months after his competitive return. All aboard the Willie Z train once again.
And he's easy to root for as well. I'm with you. He's a star in the making if he can stay healthy. I mean, that's the bottom line. And what I think we saw from him this week is a really good indication that he has come out the other side of all these things that you pointed out and is a better player. I think we're heading in the right direction. I will say this. I got a lot of mentions from people on Friday that we did not do a special podcast. I was actually a little surprised not to get an email from you Friday night saying, let's fire it up, let's do this. And so since we've glossed over it and we're already 5 minutes in, let's go ahead and get to Tiger Woods withdrawals after six holes. I believe that's right. Six holes on Friday with a quote unquote illness. You were there. It had to be mayhem. I was laughing. I was gleeful because I was at home for the first time ever not having to deal with this. What were your thoughts?
So a couple of things on this. The reason why we did not do an emergency podcast, first of all, is because I've joined the real life on Instagram. I'm sure you're familiar. Actually, you're not all that familiar with that on Instagram. It's a 30 to 60 second clip. So I did one of those, and I will be doing more of those.
It's really good. Check it out.
I've been told that I need to expand my brand socially, and so I will continue to do so. But it was very funny, Rex. And so we were in the parking lot, and there was a couple of youngish reporters from Golf.com and Golf Digest who came over. You kind of, you know, wide eyed. It was a little bit of a frenzy. I said, "Boys, this is old hat.
Been here before, boys. I've seen this movie. I know how this ends."
I said, "Back in those Tiger Tracker days, we used to just camp out in the parking lot, wait for some sort of update, see what the prognosis is going to be, speculate on when his competitive return is going to be." This one certainly took me by surprise. In the first round, really the only concern was when he said that he was experiencing back spasms over the past couple holes. I almost caught a shank in the teeth on 18 on Thursday, but it was still a little bit suspect. You know, he seemed a little bit tight, a little bit sore afterward, but we've come to expect Tiger Woods to kind of be in that state post-round. Over the past couple of years, didn't think much of it, but he did not look good from the outset on Friday. Didn't look good warming up, didn't look good on the practice putting green. I had a feeling that he was going to pull out of the tournament, but I thought it was going to be because of his back, not necessarily because he was throwing up all morning and all night and needed IVs to get through the round. In that respect, the fact that Tiger Woods had the flu and missed the remainder of this tournament, I guess was a relief. And it does bring open the possibility that, hey, we could see him at the Players' Championship. I'm not so sure that we would see him at Bay Hill. I don't think that's necessarily a golf course for him. If he really wants to get some more competitive reps besides the round that and the half that he's had in 2024, I suppose he could play at the Valspar Championship where he has at least heated up in the past. But I don't know. From what I saw, I don't think he's anywhere close to being a relevant contender for the Masters. Tell me I'm wrong.
First and foremost, I'm more concerned. I feel like this is that he has blasphemed against In-N-Out Burger. because everyone immediately went back to the pro-am on Wednesday when, of course, he grabbed an In-N-Out
housing
burger.
Housing it. He wasn't just
oh yeah,
it.
Animal style.
Just scarfing it. Just
so good. Yes, like you should, like all of us would. Like, I'm not judging Tiger Woods. Exactly how I do it. You're doing it on a red eye tonight.
I've got a flight in 6 hours. I can assure you that 4 hours from now, after we finish this podcast, after I tap out a Will Zalatoris story, I will be housing some In-N-Out as well, and hopefully not having the same repercussions.
Grease running down your hands. Like, I know exactly how this is going to work. First and foremost, I want to not blaspheme In-N-Out Burger. This cannot and will not be a blight on that wonderful institution at all. This cannot be that. Maybe it is. I don't know. But I feel like I'm going to go ahead and come to that defense. And I will say this, of everything that transpired this week with Tiger Woods, I'm less concerned about him withdrawing after six holes with some sort of stomach virus, a flu, whatever the case may be. We don't know now. We probably won't know. Than I am about him hitting a shank on the 18th hole. Did not realize it almost beamed you in the head. Like, this is news to me. So this is that one is the one that got me.
That is a sickening sound. I mean, trust me.
I mean,
I've hit shanks. You've hit shanks. This was like a well
shank. I've actually never hit a shank. I've hit so many bad golf shots in my life.
No chance.
Because I don't deliver the club that way. Like, you have to deliver it way from the inside out. And I can't do that. I wish I could.
Present Hazel first is how would.
Yes.
Is how Tiger described. That's
awesome.
That before either.
That's good. The best part was the look on Lance Bennett's face, his caddy this week, a longtime caddy on PGA Tour, worked for Matt Kuchar, among many, many others. And like the fact they immediately flashed to Lance and the look on his face, like, I can't caddy for this. Like, I don't have a number. For this, there's nothing I can do from the eucalyptus trees and Ryan Lavner's forehead.
I mean, it was actually a great recovery. And as someone who has hit many shanks before, he had the exact same club underneath the tree that he just shanked in the fairway. In the That's fairway, fantastic. He was trying to hit a little feather cut underneath the trees. He was trying to hit a low hook and actually pulled it off and missed the putt. I have to call Rex. I kind of think the excuse of back spasms may be BS, because just a hole earlier, literally 15 minutes earlier, he piped a 270-yard three wood onto the green, had a very easy two putt birdie. The only thing that leads me to believe that something actually did lock up was, and you've done this climb, the climb from the tee box to the fairway on 18 on a very uneven kind of craggly path. It's steep. I'm huffing and puffing. Obviously, Tiger's in much better shape than I am. But I could definitely, yes. Because if he's 48 and feels 68, I'm 36 and feel 86. 58. The only thing I can think of is something may have gotten a little tweaked there, but it was hard to believe the way he played the previous couple holes that something was amiss like that.
Well, and we went over this. We did it on Golf Today this week when I was hosting with Todd Lewis, and he asked me what I thought a successful week was. And I'm like, look, man, just upright for 72 holes. Like, there is some wonderful comedy in the idea that he could have missed the cut. And I think when this happened, when he ended up having to withdraw, he was actually outside the cut line. And I thought that's
outside.
Yeah, I felt like that was mildly entertaining, because here's a guy who fought for a cut, fought hard, like went tooth and nail with the tour to make sure his event had a cut, and then he was going to be one of the very, very slim few who missed the cut in a 70 man event. So there was some, I enjoyed that on some level right up until he withdrew. But as I said to Todd earlier this week, if he just remains upright for 72 holes and he has an idea, like, I don't expect him to contend. I don't expect him to finish inside the top 10 or the top 20 or whatever the case may be. Just give him 72 holes to decide what he has, to see what he has, and to figure out what he needs to work on, and physically and mentally and game-wise, all of these things. Get him ready for next month at the Players' Championship, and then that's another stepping stone going towards Augusta. Because we all know that's where this is heading. We talk about one event a month again. Apparently there's only 6 months on Tiger's calendar. We talk about one event a month all the time. Well, there's only four events that really matter to him. And so this was an opportunity for him to play 72 holes and to test the body and the back and everything else, and to find out exactly what he needed to work on. This is, I don't want to say it's a disaster, but it's a fail.
It's certainly a setback. And I think it made clear Rex just how difficult this is going to be. You know, it sounds good in theory that he can do this Hogan schedule of just playing the major championships, but we now have a large enough sample size over the past 2 years to show his best finish is a T45.
If he could do that, then yeah, that'd be fantastic. But we haven't seen that. If he could do the Hogan schedule of 5 or 6 events a year, then yeah, maybe that would work. But we really haven't seen that.
I mean, he's just so rusty with his scoring clubs and on and around the greens. And that can't be just sharpened and tidied up with competitive rounds at the Medalist playing against JT, Rory, and Ricky. I mean, you have to get a scorecard in your hand. You have to be going against the very best players in the world. You have to feel the surges of adrenaline. You have to see the different lies and conditions and see exactly where you stack up. And quite frankly, he just can't do it. He can't play enough tournaments to knock off the rust. He was 2-for-8 scrambling in the opening round here. I mean, essentially, if he missed a green, he wasn't getting up and down, and he was making bogeys. He actually made more birdies. He actually hit better iron shots than I was expecting. And we did the podcast after a practice round and his pro-am round as well. Like, he looked pretty good. Driving the golf ball looked pretty good. Iron play was actually a little bit sharper than it was last year. But it's just so messy. It's just so untidy on and around the greens that can only be sharpened with competitive reps. And he can't play the tournaments that he needs to.
He can't because, and this is probably a bit of an outlier, but he still to this day clings to that schedule that he loves so much. He wants to play the most difficult golf courses against the deepest fields in the most difficult conditions. And that sounds great in theory. And when he was, I don't know, pick a number, when he was 32 years old, that worked. Like, his body allowed him to do that. And he was better. He was bigger, stronger, faster than everyone else in the field, and that works. It doesn't work anymore. I think, and look, he's never going to do this. We banded this back and forth on Golf Today this week because Todd Lewis made the argument that, well, he needs to play Hilton Head, or he needs to play Colonial. He needs to play a golf course where he can legitimately contend anymore. Like, he's not going to do it. Like, at 48 years old, he's a fully formed adult, and he has no interest in changing it at this point. So it's going to be the Rivieras and the TPC Sawgrasses and Augusta Nationals and the major venues the rest of the way. And he's setting such a high bar for himself. Like, it's almost like he's trying to set himself up for failure, which is a terrible thing to say, but that's what you feel at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you want to say, well, it's just so easy. Just go play the Players, go play Valspar, go play something to get ready for the Masters. His body can quite frankly just not handle it. I think that's the frustrating part. Is everyone knows, I think Tiger knows what he needs to do. Physically, he just can't do it. Rex, one other thing from the week that I wanted to touch on was Jordan Spieth's disqualification in the second round. We have seen incorrect scorecards before. This was a pretty easy one where Spieth signed for a par when in fact he made a bogey. And once he left the scoring area, he was disqualified from the tournament. This was a little bit of an odd circumstance. It was kind of a perfect storm in a situation where you could see how he would get DQ'd. First of all, he made a double bogey on his 36th hole of the tournament. He was inside the top 10.
Who's that fellow behind him, by the way? I'm just curious. Really sure. Is he going to join the podcast, or is he just, no? All right.
Not really sure. We're just going to keep powering ahead. And also, Spieth was very under the weather on Friday, to say the least. Several bathroom visits, in fact, bolted up the stairs behind the 18th hole to make sure that he could get to the scoring area in time to also use the restroom. Obviously, this fueled a very hearty debate on social media. Here you have arguably a top 3 most popular player on the PGA Tour who is disqualified for what does seem like a little bit of an archaic rule in 2024, literally the scorekeeping. It was a scorekeeping error. Where do you fall on this debate? Does the punishment fit the crime of signing an incorrect scorecard?
No, it's time for golf to come out of the 19th century. Let's be honest on this one. And like, look, I was fascinated watching this one kind of from afar and seeing sort of the outrage on social media about it. And I tend to agree. We have shot link. We have. All right. Had to switch everything up then, did you?
just a little bit better vantage point.
Okay. I tend to agree with, and I don't like agreeing with the voices on social media. I don't like my allies in that particular situation. But come on, man. It's 2024. Like, we have TrackMan. We have so many things. Like, we know what someone's score is. And even if it's not Jordan Spieth, like, pick a random player that, I don't know, that no one is following. You still know exactly what his score is. The way the PGA Tour is set up these days, like, no one's going to slip through and be like, I shot 71. No, he shot 72. You got me. Sorry. No, that's not going to happen in the modern PGA Tour, because there's walking scores, there's shot link, there's all of these things. So I just think it's time to, I understand there was a time back in the day when Roberto DiVincenzo had to walk behind the 18th green. And I did this story and I interviewed Roberto about this. It was a tiny little like unfolding table behind the green at 18. And the entire crowd is kind of over your shoulder as you sign your scorecard. There's a lot going on. And I can see how in that day and age, no one really knew what Roberto had shot. The scoreboard said it, but you weren't 100% sure. So I understand the need for him to get that right, him to sign the card, and because that's the way the system worked. Today, we don't need that. There's cameras pretty much on everyone. There's shot link on everyone. There's radar on everyone. Like, it's just not necessary. Let's stop clinging to these things. And again, we had this argument last week about Scottsdale. Like, golf wants to be mainstream. Golf wants to be popular. It wants to be one of the sports that everyone talks about. And yet we constantly shoot ourselves in the foot with things like this.
And it's so interesting because I think it was in 2019 where the rules of golf underwent this modernization to kind of do away with some of these archaic rules. You know, you think of the player kind of lessening the punishment for an infraction that was discovered only kind of unknowingly by the player and only discovered with the slow motion replay. Like, that punishment has been lessened. I'm okay with there being a punishment for signing an incorrect scorecard. There at least needs to be some sort of personal accountability or responsibility, but a disqualification from the tournament is just overly harsh. It is way too severe. Dock him a shot, dock him two shots.
Just whatever. Fix the score. You don't have to do any of that. Just fix the score and make it what it actually was. I'm fine with that. It's not like he was trying to cheat. I don't believe that. I don't believe he was trying to cheat.
No, I think he was in such like a head fog from being under the weather. And there was pressing matters in the scoring tent of trying to wrap it up.
I think In-N-Out got him too.
As quick as possible. Also those two guys on the PGA Tour policy.
The same.
Who knows what's happening in those policy board meetings? Like, I think there should be some sort of penalty, but this is just way too harsh. I'm with you. There's dozens, if not hundreds, of cameras located on the golf course. We have finite data represented through all the shot link data throughout tournaments. Like, it's just outrageous that we're still signing other players' scorecards. You still get the cutout. You're still reading it. It's still being inputted into computer. It's just so unnecessary. So I'm with you. I think there should be a penalty, but a DQ in these times, it's outrageous.
I don't even think there should be a penalty, because look, I don't like, you don't expect an NFL player to keep the official score on the field while they're playing. Like, I just don't know why we can't come into 2024. And I guess the idea is, like, look, there are some levels of golf where this still applies. And you and I will both be at golf's longest day for the U.S. Open sectional qualifier.
Golf's longest day, college golf. I think even Korn Ferry Tour, when you're traveling to some of these far-flung locations that they are, where you don't have the volunteer presence that a PGA Tour event does. Totally get that.
And you have to be careful about it. Totally get it.
There definitely needs to be some guardrails in place. But a PGA Tour event, a $20 million PGA Tour event with tens of thousands of fans on site in an enormous volunteer army. I just don't understand the penalty.
I want to switch gears real quick because this is a signature event and coming off of Phoenix, where we talked a lot about everything that went wrong with Phoenix. Do you feel like this is a little bit more of an indication of what we can expect from the signature events?
I don't know. I mean, walking around Riviera this week, it kind of felt juiceless. It seems ridiculous, but you think about the defending champion of this tournament, Jon Rahm, who is now on LIV. And I'm not saying John Rahm is the needle on the PGA Tour, but his absence this week, I think was noticeable. And I think it was felt in ways that I'm not sure I expected. If you think about the PGA Tour and the depth that you have, I think it's deeper than it's ever been before. But I think the actual top level of the sport is pretty condensed. You have Scottie Scheffler, a major champion, but he hasn't won on the PGA Tour since the Players' Championship. You have Roy McIlroy, who's been a fantastic player over the past 15 years. And John Rahm, I would put in that tier one as well. If you remove one of those players, that one of those top-end players from a PGA Tour event, that's huge. I mean, we talked about Patrick Cantlay on this podcast. We talked about Xander Schauffele on this podcast. Will Zalatoris, if he can kind of rejoin that upper echelon as well. Victor Hovland's not playing his best golf this year. Jordan Spieth got DQ'd. Justin Thomas is on his way back. Whatever the case may be, there is a very defined tier one in golf. And when you lose one of those players and you're down 33%, I think it was very noticeable. And there was a distinct lack of juice this week. Now, when you step back, you say, okay, Tiger wasn't there. Spieth wasn't there. JT wasn't there. Rahm wasn't there. What do you expect? Patrick Cantlay was up by five at the halfway point. What do you expect? I thought with this leaderboard that we had, it would feel a little bit more exciting than it was on Sunday, Rex.
No, and watching from home, I think I'm with you on that one. And it's tough because this is an iconic event on an iconic course in Los Angeles. All of the things, Tiger Woods is the host, and it still felt flat. And I guess this goes back to, it's just been a bad 3 weeks for professional golf. And I'm not even laying that on the PGA Tour. I feel like it goes both ways. I feel like it's been a bad 3 weeks for the PGA Tour, for LIV Golf, for everyone who's involved for golf on that level. And look, I always want to separate them. Like, it's been a bad 3 weeks for professional golf. Golf is still fine. Like, golf itself, like, I went and played this weekend. The golf course was packed. Everyone was having fun. That's an entirely different scenario. In this case, like, you look at what happened last week in Scottsdale. And I'm not even talking about the weather, and I'm not even particularly talking about what happened with the fans. It just, to your point, it felt flat. You go back to Pebble Beach with the weather, shortened to 54 holes, it just felt flat. And then to hear it from you that when what I'm watching on TV matches up with what you see on site, it leads me more and more to the inevitable conclusion that whatever's going to happen, and that's a drinking game. Like, I don't remember who sent it in, but that's a fantastic drinking game. Whatever's going to happen, drink up now, is going to be good for golf because it's going to bring all of us back together. And I feel like that we have to. There is no other choice because you're right. Going separate directions isn't the right. It can't work.
Whatever's going to happen. I believe the other one was
hammered. Stop it.
Whatever the case may be, I think those were the two buzzers from this podcast. I don't believe I've said it previously. I've purposely tried to cut that out of my vernacular for this podcast. Perhaps I have not done so successfully. I think that does, Rex, segue to something that Rory again reiterated on Saturday, this need for a world tour, the need for the best players to come together. I fleshed it out on NBCSports.com/golf on Saturday night. In it wasn't necessarily what he was saying, but it was kind of some of the details that he presented that he hadn't previously done so, whether on that soccer podcast at the end of the year or in Dubai earlier this year. And so he's talking about, you know, having this 80 players. He's having it be 24 tournaments. He's talking about visiting Australia, the Far East, and the Middle East, and having half of the tournaments in the U.S. and half of them kind of spanning the globe. It's going to be this Champions Tour model, which, even though I had to look it up, I don't think it's a perfect example with how it's actually going to work. But in his idea, the PGA Tour is actually under what this world tour would be, and everything is kind of flowing in that direction. That only works when you have the best players all together. That only works when you have the best players in the PGA Tour, the best players in the DP World Tour, and the best players from LIV Golf all together again. It just seems, Rex, talking to some players, like either Rory's way ahead of the curve or Rory is way outside the box from what everyone else wants. But it does not seem like the top players are on the same page for what the future of golf needs or should look like.
I wrote this at Pebble Beach. I feel like Rory is sort of the, he's the foreteller. He's the one that's going to call it early. I hope so. Like, and look, he's come around a lot. Like, he's changed his tune a lot. He's done a lot of dancing, and that in itself is a whole different conversation. But when it comes to these things, it's a bit of foreshadowing. And I think Rory's got it right. Like, I think eventually it's going to actually, this is fantastic. I didn't even read the handle when you sent me this. It's at Golf Barbecue, BBQ, and Watches. That is fantastic. Like,
I mean, we should be best friends with this guy. I like all those things.
That guy. And it was one, what that looks like, and two, whatever the case may be. So I think we've only
go back and listen.
Yeah, we've only hit one of those, just to be fair, but that is a fantastic handle.
Drink up.
I feel like Rory on this, and I'm not going to, again, this is an ally that I don't particularly want in this case. I feel like he's 100% accurate. Like, we're going to land at a spot eventually. I'm trying to talk my way around whatever it is is going to cause me to say those words. Whatever it is, wherever it is we land, it has to be some version of that global tour. Whether Rory is right or not, I don't know. But it's got to come back together, because I don't think it's sustainable to have all of the top players in the world, half the top players in one location and the other half here.
I mean, golf is just not popular enough to support two tours. It isn't. And look, you can poke a lot of holes in this world tour concept. You can poke holes in the fact that it's just going to be 80 players and it kind of seems like a closed shop. You could point to the fact that this is basically, as I pointed out on Golf Central on Saturday night, this is essentially just a bloated version of LIV, right? If it's going to be 80 players and 24 tournaments, and LIV Golf is 52 players and 14 tournaments around the world, it's really not all that different. This has been an idea that's been formulated for the past 25 or 30 years. I just think now there's more of an urgency, especially now with the injection of money from the Strategic Sports Group. If you want to maximize profitability, and we said this a couple times, there's only a couple ways to do that. You can cut costs, and I'm sure they will be cutting costs around the PGA Tour. But another one is to engage fans in a way that you haven't previously, and to tap into new sponsors, new venues, and new markets. And so as Rory continues to say, and I thought he was quite eloquent on Saturday, right now it's trying to get all these top players to sing from the same hymn sheet. There are so many competing interests, whether it's a top player, whether it's a middle-class player and a rank-and-file player, whether it's a media partner, whether it's a sponsor, whether it's tour leadership, like everyone has their own competing interests. And either convincing them that this is the best path forward, or having it laid out for them that this is the only way to proceed. It seems like a battle that Rory's willing to wage, but talking to some of these youngish Americans on the PGA Tour, like they're not buying it. They're not buying that they need to go travel 8 to 10 times abroad to complete this new world tour schedule. I think that's where the hangup's going to be.
And I think they will eventually. Like, again, it's going to be a changing landscape. And once everything plays its way out, I think it's safe to say that you would have enough compelling arguments to make to all of the top players on both sides, on the PGA Tour side and on the LIV Golf side, to explain that this is best for golf. It's best for you as a player. It's best for the media partners. It's best for the sponsors. It's best for the fans. And we can argue that has been the point of this all along. And I will say this, and I was really, really curious of this. I had to watch it a couple of times. And I am not, this is not me criticizing a media partner in at all.
Go on.
Well, but Mackenzie Hughes did a walk and talk during his round. I believe it was on Friday, if I'm not mistaken. Saturday. And during that walk and talk, they specifically dug into the idea that I guess Max got some serious ideas on it's become more about money than he's comfortable with. He's not the only tour player that's come up with this. And my guess is, I don't know this, so I would be really, really curious, that he probably indicated to the producers that this is something he wanted to talk about, which is all well and good. Well, you're shaking your head, so apparently it was not something he wanted to talk about.
No, that was not. That is not the time. That is not the time.
That is not the time to get into this.
He just hit his approach into 15, and all of a sudden you're going to hit him with, so what do you think about this whole divided landscape?
Maybe he wanted to talk about it. I don't know. Maybe this is something that he told the producers that, yeah, like, I'm passionate about this. Hit me with it. Like, slap me across the face with it. I have something to say. That's great. After a round on Wednesday, after a pro-am round on Tuesday, whatever the case may be, I love Mac's thoughts on this. Like, it was well thought out. He was articulate. He was insightful. Like, all of the things that I love about Mac Hughes, he was right there, but not in the middle of a round. I'm not going to ask him to, like, what's the next question? What do you think of the Israeli war? Like, is that the next question?
I mean, I thought he handled it really well. I thought he was quite eloquent. But can you imagine, like, Patrick Mahomes being mic'd up on the sidelines and he's waiting for his next possession? All of a sudden, they hit him with, like,
thoughts on free agency.
So what do you think about, like, the next collective bargaining? Like, what are some of the bullet points you guys are trying to do? It was – that was a big miss. And if I'm Mac Hughes, I would have not been particularly enthused either.
Well, and I do want to say, and I think it's this month's green sheet. So green sheet's just kind of a form that's sent to players every month. It's kind of updating.
How do you get those?
I have ways of getting them. Anyway, in this month's green sheet, it's kind of just inside stuff on tournaments and whatever players need to know. There was an entire page, and it was written by, I'm sure, Jack Ryan. Like, I've never asked Jack, but he's a tour official. He's like, he's from Georgia, you know him. Like, it was just dripping with Jack Ryan. But they had broken down exactly how players had performed before, during, and after these in-round interviews. And what they were doing with this one pager was trying to convince players that...
Trying to allay some concerns that this would be a huge distraction.
Like, I think scoring average actually went up during the interview. It went up after the interview versus what it was before the interview, which is completely anecdotal. Like, it shouldn't be anything at all attached to it. But I do remember watching those first interviews last year. Like, I remember watching Billy Horschel, maybe at the Honda Classic last year. And they were talking to him as coming up 16, which is a really hard hole to begin with. And he's chopping it up. And I'm thinking, this is going to end it. Like, it's all going to stop right here. We're never going to have another one of these. But to do that interview, like, it has to be light and fluffy. Like, I'm all about hard journalism. Like, my entire career is tried to be about hard journalism. But in that moment, it's got to be thoughts on playing 16. It can't be anything more than that.
Especially since the 15th hole at Riviera is one of the most difficult holes on the golf course. Mac Hughes, to his credit, delivered an eloquent answer and still made par. He ended up bogeying the 18th hole, and he had a forgettable day on Sunday. Shot 74 and ended up dropping all the way outside the top 30. So Jack is probably going to have to update his green sheet for next month to say exactly what happened to Mackenzie Hoops. I hope this does not discourage other players from doing so, because I do think there is a benefit to it. I think it is overwhelmingly been a success over the past year and a half. But I also would not blame Mac Hughes if he thought that was a big swing and a miss on Saturday at Riviera. All right. That is going to do it from this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. I have a Will Zalatoris story to write. I have some in and out to devour, and I have a red-eye flight to catch. Rex and I will both be on Golf Today on Tuesday for our traditional two-segment roundtable. Make sure you guys check out that as well, Rex, as at Ryan Labner on Instagram, verified account. I'll be living the real life and posting more on there. You guys are welcome in advance. But we'll be back on Wednesday for a preview. Could be a short one of the Mexico Open before the tour heads to the Sunshine State and the official run-up to the Masters. But thank you guys, as always, for listening and reading the website. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Have a good rest of your weekend.
Shout out Ross for all your help.